What's up? What's up? Press play on the intro. Intro plays, and here we are at the Why Jesus podcast. Now, I actually deleted the video for the intro, so here we are, just having an awkward introduction into
That's
this
right,
already.
Just awkwardly staring to the camera, and as John likes to mention, my extreme enthusiasm and charisma is just coming through as we speak. I'm super excited to be here. I don't know about you, John, but.
I'm always excited to have you here, especially when there's male strippers going on at men's conferences, and you know we know that you're always working on your six pack and stuff like
that. That's right.
So.
I just got back from the gym, almost came on shirtless just to prove a point, but yep. You know.
Well, I know that you just came back from the men's conference, so you know.
yeah, the men's conference. That's where I was.
Yeah. So
you know. I mean, I might be jumping a gun already, but what really was interesting about that whole event was that a bunch of the guys were sitting there watching the show, but then when Mark Driscoll, quote-unquote, called it out, they were all, like, cheering on his behalf, and then when he got booed off, when he got shooed off stage, they were booing the other guy who shooed him off stage, but I was like, you guys were all sitting there watching it. Why?
Anyway, hold on. We'll jump. You know what? We're gonna do that one first. But so today we have a crazy episode. It's been a crazy week. All right. Bill Maher said the quiet part out loud about abortion. He said that it's murder. Well, he said it's kind of like murder, but yeah. It is murder, right? Then we had Iran attacked Israel. So going a little bit crazy over there. Then we had Bishop Mari Emanuel over in Australia. He's a bishop of an Orthodox church. He's a pretty popular figure, but he got stabbed during his service. So we had that happen. And then we had Mark Driscoll, the ever infamous Mark Driscoll, get kicked off stage at a men's conference because he was rebuking the fact that Dylan was up there doing a performance when
he was just jealous of my abs and my ability to be athletic.
Yeah, something like that. So let's jump into that. So the story is, well, not the story. What happened is there was this men's conference that I guess some megachurch pastor put together. I don't know. I don't follow all megachurch stuff. I don't follow all hyper charismania stuff. I just don't. I just had a baby. Well, I didn't have the baby. My wife had the baby. But taking
which I must know, you're already using for clout. I just have to throw that out there. Yeah, I'm on Instagram and there's a baby and John and just promoting your book. I'm just like, wow, already leveraging the baby clout.
You know what happens is that whenever I post a picture of like me and Gio, it always gets a whole bunch of likes and comments and stuff like that. When I post a picture of me or just like promoting something, nobody says anything. So what I have learned is that people like other people more than they like me. So when I post my son next to my book and I'm like, hey, got to buy diapers, so buy the book. It's kind of like I know that they're going to like the picture because my son is in it, and then it boosts the algorithm. So
man,
all part of the plan. Yep. If my son cannot be used to promote my book, then like why did I have a son? You know, like God's son promotes the Bible. So there we have it, right? Somebody's gonna clip that up and you know.
Why Jesus confirmed heretics.
Yep, exactly. All right, so let's get into it. This whole fiasco happened where there's this big men's conference, and I, from my understanding of it, it's like a big show. It's a circus, you could say. There's like monster trucks and boxing, which I am all for some boxing and monster trucks at any type of conference. I'm in on it. And they had like an opening performance. And I guess this guy was swallowing swords. He might be not a magician, but
he was a sword swallower, pole dancer, dude.
Right. Now, I remember when I lived in Miami, I would go work out on Miami Beach. And there was this guy, he would wear headphones, like huge headphones. And he would work out on the poles there. Like I would do the dips and the pull-ups and stuff. And he would do the pole dancing, but he didn't like, you know, weird dance or anything. He just used it and he was doing like human flags and stuff. This guy was solid. Like I'm talking about solid. So not everyone who does the pole thing is like what we saw at
an exotic at dancer.
Yeah, some people just use, like, I used to do the human flag as well back in the day when I was as shredded as Dylan.
That's right.
I mean, LT. Sorry, not supposed to use the real names here. No real names. Batman, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. There was this. He took off his shirt, and I guess there's the argument for why he took off his shirt is so you could see the sword going all the way down. I don't know. That's what they're saying. But then he did his whole act on the pole. And he hung upside down with his arms out, and it looked like an upside down cross. And so this was like, you got to think, Mark Driscoll is somebody who's like Asher poles, Spirit of Jezebel. Like, he's into all of this stuff and symbolism and whatnot. And so he sees it, I guess, and then goes on stage during his thing. By the way, if you guys hear that in the background, that is the lawnmower of LT's neighbor. All right.
Roommate.
Roommate. So anyway, Mark Driscoll then goes on stage and starts rebuking what happened. And in the middle of it, the guy who put the whole entire event together kicked him off the stage. And Mark, to his credit, was like, all right, I'll take that. And he got off stage. So that's what happened.
And apparently they like had a reconciliation moment afterwards or
something. Yeah, they did. They did. What are your first thoughts on this whole situation?
My word. So I will say a lot of the titles, like the headlines and the Christian media and stuff, I think were a little bit misleading because they're like, they said like pool dancer, something about like pool dancer, Mark Driscoll calls it out, something like that. And I felt like it was a little misleading because when you first read a lot of those headlines, you're like, oh, there was like some male stripper doing a, you know, strip tease for all these dudes. And I thought that was kind of weird. But then I watched the video. I'm like, oh, so it was like a circus performance almost, kind of like something like that. It wasn't like a it didn't come across to me as actually something sexual. I'll put it that way. Like, gotcha. I didn't watch that thinking it was really that. I don't know. In that line of dancing. But it was still kind of weird. Like, I don't get it. I think men's conferences these days are really losing focus of what they should be about. I don't, like, have you seen the one of, what's the guy, the famous karate dude, Chuck Norris, where Chuck Norris is at that men's conference in a tank, and he's like, and there's like, he's like firing guns in the air or whatever, and he's like driving a tank, and there's like explosions and monster rallies. Apparently, it was like some sort of big church men's conference. You ever see that one?
What?
That's another one you can. But anyway, it reminds me of that type of thing where these men's conferences are trying more and more to really leverage entertainment, and they're going to really weird entertainment too, or like, you know, whatever, and they're not focusing as much on the scripture. So I think my issue is less with the fact that I think it was a sexual act, and more the fact that it distracts from the actual purpose of what a men's conference should be about. If men are going there to be entertained, they're going there for the wrong reasons. I'll put it that way.
Right. I would agree with you as well. Now, I'm all for men's conferences. I think that it's important, especially I understand the focus on manly stuff. You know, like Chuck Norris, that dude's a man's man right there. Walker, Texas Ranger. I used to watch that in my babysitter's basement when I was playing sick from school. But... So I understand, and especially it's kind of like a correction, you could say, to the sissifying of men that we have going on in today's society. Yeah. So I could see that, but we're supposed to be different. You know what I mean? Like, we're supposed to be different. I don't know if you've seen these like alpha male retreats that they do.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you talk about the like secular ones, like with Andrew Tate type people.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like yelling at you and. Basically, it's like a Navy SEALs training, except
essentially sucks money out of lonely men is what they do.
Right. And it's like $10,000 a pop. Some of them, are $18,000.
Some of them are really pricey.
Right. So, there's a space that's trying to be filled, right? There's definitely this need for masculinity and especially biblical masculinity. I'm all for that. I think that the idea that Christians are pushovers and, you know, all that. It's just not true. You know what I mean? We're not supposed to go through life with our heads down and you know.
But the thing that I think would be more effective to accomplish that from a men's conference standpoint would be to actually go into scripture and look at what manliness is within terms of biblically speaking. Like looking through scripture and be like, okay, a man is someone who is a spiritual leader. A man is someone who works hard and works hard at their craft and is dedicated and stuff. A man is someone who honors God and sets an example even when things are hard. Like I'd rather go through scripture and like establish the standards of masculinity than to try to use things that are stereotypically masculine, like monster trucks and swords, to get that across.
And Chuck Norris. Yeah, but don't let him hear. I don't want him to hear us say this, though.
No, I think we kind of established our thoughts on the performance and the retreat itself. It could definitely have been better. I'll put it that way.
Right.
Well, now jumping into Mark's response, which is what made it go viral. What are your thoughts on that?
So I'm going to try to put how I feel about Mark Driscoll, like, to the side and just look at what he did. Now, a lot of people try to pull the Mark 18 thing where so I forget the guy's name who ran the whole entire thing, but when he went on stage after he kicked Mark off,
was it Mark 18 or Matthew 18?
Matthew 18. Yep. Sorry, I'm doing the Gospel of Mark right now, so it's like, boom, in my head, going verse by verse through it. By the way, that's a plug. Every Monday, 8 o'clock, Bible study, going through the Gospel of Mark. So thank you for that. But so people are like throwing that around, you know, talk to your brother in private, but. That's about like the local church, you know, that context. Mm-hmm. That's not really about what's going on. So I can, there's layers to it, right? One, I can see Mark, that's probably why I said Mark too, because we're talking about Mark Driscoll. but I could see Mark, you know, just going on stage and saying, you know what, I'm going to call this out because this is bad. I think that is bad. I don't know about the whole Jezebel spirit and like that's an Asher pole and all of that. That's like, that's a little too far for me, buddy. You're going too far with it. But
do we know if Mark was aware of the schedule of events?
So that's my thing. So that's the other layer to it, right? Where the guy was like, look, he spoke to me for a half hour prior to him coming on stage and saying this. So in that half hour, he could have spoke to me about this because I guess this was after what, after the performance, then he spoke with the guy for whatever, talking about whatever. So the person running it, I guess, was like, hey, he could have told me about this instead of going on stage. You know, if he felt a certain type of way, we could have spoke about it from stage together. But instead, he just jumped out the window. So I don't think that there was knowledge of this before. I've done many speaking events and there was opening acts at speaking events. I had no idea, you know, and it could just be like singing the national anthem and stuff like that. I just didn't know that they were singing the national anthem. I got no problem with it, but I didn't know that was on schedule, you know?
Yeah.
So there's definitely when you go to speaking conferences or speaking engagements, you don't know every single thing that the people who are putting it together are doing. You should do your due diligence in trying to find that out. But he probably respected the person putting it together and was like, yeah, why do I need to know the opening act? I trust this guy. It's going to be fine. So I think that him calling it out, I'm cool with. But I think he did this, you know, and this is me speculating, just looking at Mark's track record. I think that he did this purposely to say he held it into himself and was like, I'm going to say this on stage so that way it can be recorded and people can talk about it. Because he's a marketing genius, Mark.
Yeah.
He knows how to get his name in people's mouths. So I think that underneath it all is you have that too playing into it, which I'm just not cool with because it's self-promotion and not God promotion.
Mm-hmm. I think for me the biggest thing was I can understand why someone may publicly call something out. I think the Matthew 18 thing applies more to personal conflicts.
Yeah.
Rather than like for instance, if there was a heresy within the church going on, Paul would call it out publicly. Like, he wasn't afraid to call out heresy and stuff like that publicly to a church. Or if he saw a common practice among all church members, he would call it out.
Right.
And something like that is, I didn't perceive it as Mark directly attacking the person who set it up. I saw him as criticizing everyone who was there who partook in it. I can see how the person who set it up would take the brunt of it because they're the one, obviously, who scheduled everything. But all those guys, for the most part, sat there and watched it. And if Mark did truly feel that way, I guess you could say that he had the right to address it publicly because all these people partook in it in a certain extent. But beyond that, my issue with the whole criticism that he presented was, it was very loosely rooted in anything that made sense, in my opinion. It was like he was using very weird analogies to, like, the ashram thing or whatever.
Yeah,
like
Ashrapol, because
Ashrapol and really
Spirit
making
of Jezebel.
Spirit of Jezebel, like, and then like sword swallowing and different things. He was like pulling a lot of analogies that were very stretching and like weird. Like, if he would have just stuck with the fact that, hey, this guy has a history of doing male stripping and here he's doing a performance at this thing, and I don't think that's right. I think we should be focused on the scripture and not promoting this guy's practice. I can at least respect that, but the approach he took, I thought, was extremely weird and twisting scripture to get a rile out of people.
Well, it's also to show that he has more knowledge about these things than other people. You know, there's a deeper, more spiritual side to this and a darker demonic side to this that you guys in the audience and even the people putting this together aren't aware about. But me, Mark Driscoll, go check my book, I know about these things. And so he's going to drop these words like the Ashrapol and the spirit of Jezebel and, you know, things that you're not aware of, I know about. So, and if you look on Twitter, I think he said that he's going to be doing a series talking about what it is he was mentioning on there. So the dude knows what he's doing, but we got to move on to the next one because it's been a crazy week. So the other day I came across this clip from Bill Maher. I'm going to pull it up right now, in which he was discussing, oh, and I just lost the camera.
There's a nice still frame we got going on.
Yeah,
there.
At least it's not a crazy, crazy face. You know what I mean? All right. Are we back? No, EOS webcam. There we go. All right. So I came across this clip, and the discussion was about abortion, because that's a hot topic right now. I believe it was the governor, or the person who was running for governor of Arizona, made a statement on abortion. Donald Trump made a statement on abortion. Joe Biden made a huge statement on abortion as well.
And even the Pope recently made a statement on abortion.
Yeah, so it's a hot topic right now, as it always is around election time. But Bill Maher said the quiet part out loud in his discussion with Piers Morgan and some other lady that I don't know. So I'm going to pull this clip up and then we'll discuss it.
Not if you believe it's murder. You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing. Or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states? Like, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left on when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women. People who aren't pro-life, they're pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that. What?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not
is
sure.
Is that not
get
your
much
position if you're pro-choice?
Isn't that mainly because you don't like children? I mean,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
No. I mean, but if you are, you said you're pro-choice. Hmm. That's your position too.
Bro. Like, he said that and it was just dead silence. But the fact is, Bill Maher has looked at the data, looked at the scientific evidence. I believe it's like 96% of all biologists say that life begins at conception. So therefore, if you terminate a pregnancy, yeah, you are terminating a life. And Bill Maher, he's just being consistent with the data. And him saying that, you could like hear the silence in the crowd. Like,
yeah, it's a pin drop silence.
Yeah. And it's, what's interesting is I can appreciate, I think that that's, that just shows he's probably a pretty disgusting human being, to be
this
okay
whole thing about
that,
like recently, you know, conservatives have liked Bill Maher because he's not quote unquote woke, but he's still like very liberal. He's still very much not a conservative by any stretch of the imagination. And like, it's one of those things where it's just so frustrating. Like, it's, I like, some people, a lot of people are like, I'm glad he's honest, but at the same time, it just disgusts me. Like, it's just so, I don't know. I don't even know. It's just so disgusting to me that there's people out there who are literally like, yeah, it's murder and stuff, and they're like just okay with it. They don't care. It's this selfishness. It's what it is. It's just selfishness. It's people who want to live a certain lifestyle, who want to live a certain way, and they want to be able to have, let's be honest, they want to have sex without consequence. And here they are just trying to, quote unquote, get rid of the problem. And it's because why? Because a child might hinder them from pursuing the career they want. A child might hinder them from having as much money as they want. A child might hinder them from being able to sleep around with other dudes, like, or whatever. Like, it's all selfish reasons. And the few emotional arguments from the standpoint of, you know, sexual assault and things like that, are just emotionally charged. They're not necessarily logically consistent.
Right. And I think that's, you know, that's the issue, is that there is so much information out there that you have to be blind and willingly ignorant to not understand what abortion actually is. There's just too much information out there. But I will say that Planned Parenthood, their propaganda machine and marketing team are incredible at suppressing this information and then going to the personhood argument, you know, if it's, you know, scientifically life begins, but, you know, they're not a person yet. And that's just a philosophical argument that gets you nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to philosophy. And I remember years ago, I made a video about this topic, breaking down the different philosophies of what is personhood and all these different things. And really, it always boils down to the same arguments and the same things like, okay, when does someone become a human being, thus, like, we assuming that people aren't sociopaths and agree that human beings deserve to live.
Right.
Like, there's this idea of like, okay, does it start, is it physical? Do you have to have a physical thing? Well, there's people who are missing arms, there's people who are missing legs, there's people who are missing a lot of things physically, who aren't complete, who are malformed, and we would still say it's not right to kill them. We would still say it's not right to harm them. So obviously you don't have to be physically fully mature to be considered a human being. What about like, you know, mental maturity? Well, there's people with mental disabilities, there's people who aren't as smart as others, there's people who are this and that. And most people would say, you know, you deserve to live just because your mental capacity isn't there. And then it would boil down, oftentimes it will boil down to, well, they don't have consciousness is what they'll try to go to. Something like that. Does someone have to be actively conscious for them to have value in their life? Do they have to actively be aware to have value? If that's the case, if someone's sleeping or in a coma, do we have the right to just kill them because they're not actively conscious or aren't actively aware? Like, it's silly. Like, all the arguments boil down to being just selfish and silly. It doesn't make any sense.
I think the personhood argument is the stupidest argument that the pro-abortion side has. And this is my reasoning. So they'll say that, well, we don't know when it becomes a person, right? But then how does that logically follow, therefore we can kill it?
Yeah.
Right? So we don't know when it becomes a person. So, you know, since we don't know, we can kill it at, you know, between this time period, and it's always an arbitrary line depending on who you talk to, it's going to be later or earlier, right? My thing is, if what you're saying is true, and we do not know when it actually attains personhood, then we should not terminate it, because at any point we could be terminating an actual life since we don't know. It's the stupidest argument, but
everyone knows. So, and it's also, it falls apart practically as well. I know right now we're just kind of ranting now, but
this is a good discussion.
It also falls apart practically for me. Like, whenever I think about it from a practical standpoint, okay, okay, all right. Abortion is quote unquote okay. You know, they're just clump of cells when they're just fetuses, and they don't have personhood, so therefore they're expendable. All right, let's just assume that. All right, everyone has abortions for the rest of humanity. They keep killing them off. Oh wait, human beings cease to exist. Wow. How could we see that coming? Oh wait, it's because they're still humans. Like at the end of the day, they are human beings. And they are humans from conception. And without them, if we would kill them off like they're not humans, we kill ourselves. Like, it doesn't make sense from a practical standpoint either.
Right. I look at sin in that way sometimes, you know, when people try to argue about, well, why is this a sin and why is that a sin? We can go to the Bible. We can go to God's word. But also there's practicalities to it, right? So if everybody in the world just committed this one sin, how would it look 20 years from now? You know, like if everybody just did that. How would it look a few generations from now? Would there even be generations from now if we only did this one sin, right? And I think that you're right on point there when it comes to abortion.
And it's one of those things with, I think that works for a lot of sins, actually. Like, the interesting thing about sins is that from a practical standpoint, the reason why in Romans it says, like, everyone is, like, judged, basically, even if they don't necessarily know of Jesus or know of God, is because actually a lot of these moral questions are pretty practical common sense things. Like, for instance, if whatever this behavior is doesn't lead to life, it's probably wrong, most likely. So like abortion or gay homosexual relationships and things like that. Things from, like, if you think about them practically, if everyone would do them or if people would engage in them, they wouldn't produce life and they wouldn't be fruitful for life. Broken households, broken marriages, things like that. They don't produce life. They ruin relationships. They ruin children's futures. So like whenever you think about these things practically, oftentimes it's like, oh yeah, well, yeah, it's not conducive for life. It's not conducive for a healthy society. So therefore, it's probably wrong.
And that's even if you strip it down to just strictly secular reasoning, right? Like if you just strip it down and there is no God, there is no anything out there. But if, because, you know, secular philosophers, they argue that the purpose of life is to continue human life, for the flourishing of human life. So if you look at many of the sins, like some that you just discussed, if people just did that, there would be no flourishing of human life in the long run. So it doesn't even work from a secular philosophical standpoint. But anyway, back to the Bill Maher saying the quiet part out loud, right? I think that there was a moment in the crowd there when he said that, right? It was uncomfortable to hear him say it. You usually never see Bill Maher get a little bit like jumpy or anything. He's usually pretty calm, pretty well demeanor. He realized
he's a confident person. I would say even arrogant.
Yeah. He realized in that moment what he said didn't land. And you know why it didn't land? Because people in the audience may not have came to that realization yet, and they just did when you said it. So there's going to be people who were in that audience and who watched it online, millions of viewers watching it online, who he may have just done the pro-life movement a service, because now you have people sitting there, wait, Bill Maher, this guy that I really look up to, that I agree with his politics, I agree with his philosophy on life, he says that this is murder, and he's apparently saying it in a way where there's no way around it.
Yeah, nope. And it's one of those things where that type of thinking leads you down really bad roads. Like, whenever you've studied, I don't know if you ever studied the philosophers who are like these eugenic types, who like really support eugenics and things.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
Sanger was she was big into eugenics.
Yeah, I know people who will like test to see if their fetus or their child to be or whatever child is going to have Down syndrome or something like that, and then based on that result, they might get an abortion. Like, there's this twisted mindset that starts to create where it's like, okay, if someone has this condition, they're expendable. And if someone doesn't match our status quo that we want, they're expendable. They're no longer valuable. And you start to go down this really weird, twisted route that a lot of tyrannical governments and stuff have taken in the past.
I'm looking this up right now. There's a country that has an extremely low Down syndrome birth rate, right? And the reason why they have an extremely low Down syndrome birth rate is because the majority of people abort. I forget which, Iceland, right? So Iceland close to becoming the first country where no Down syndrome children are born. You know why?
Super sad.
Because they abort them.
Super sad. Like, so am I, like, within the community I'm a part of, within and about this community, pretty much everyone's pro-life, which shouldn't be shocking. And we have a lot of people within this community who have either Down syndrome or something equivalent, where it's like some sort of mental handicap or physical handicap or whatever. And what's very interesting to me is never once has it really like, oh, I wish they weren't here. Like, I never think like that. It's always like there's an interesting thing that people with that mental capacity bring a certain joy to the room that, like, it's hard to explain, where there's a simple, it's almost like they're enjoying life simply. And when you talk to them about God, like, everything is like, it's like a faith of a child. And it's something very actually beautiful and joyful about it. And a lot of times they're hilarious. They're really funny and like enjoyable to be around. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, I don't know how messed up of a person you have to be to just not want them to be around.
It's selfishness. And this goes back to human nature at its core. An unregenerated human being is just, I mean, I can be selfish I'm a new creation in Christ, and I still find myself being selfish all the time. But I think about, it's essentially child sacrifice, because you do not want the responsibility and the challenges that are going to come with raising somebody who has a disability. Therefore, it's better in your mind if you just don't bring them into this world, because one, they'll suffer, right? That's how people justify it. They'll say that the child will suffer in a certain way. And then, you know, we'll suffer. Me and my spouse will suffer because we now have to do more and provide more. And we could barely provide for a normal child. How are we going to do this? So you justify justify killing your child to make your life better. And that to me is just sad.
Yeah. Anyway, we could be on this topic for a while.
Yeah. We kind of got to move on. But I think that Bill Maher saying that was a W to the pro-life movement, but it also just shows human depravity in real time. It's funny because I think the show is called Real Time with Bill Maher. So it shows human depravity in real time, saying, yeah, it kind of is murder, and I'm okay with that. 8 billion people in the world, I won't miss you that much. Nobody laughs. All right, on to the next one. So we have, hold on, I'm just moving this thing over here. So recently, in Australia, that's my Australia.
You're accent. Very good at that.
Yeah. Bishop Mari Emanuel, he's a bishop in the Orthodox Church. He's been on the Valuetainment podcast. He's a popular voice, I would say, nowadays. Even my brother.
I actually used to see him pop up in like shorts and stuff, like short feed and things.
Even my brother knew who he was, and my brother's, you know, pretty liberal. He was like, oh yeah, that's the guy who thinks the UN is created by Satan. And I'm like, maybe he does think that. I don't know.
I have no idea. But, I don't know his theology.
Yeah, but glad you know who he is. So anyway, he got stabbed.
Yeah.
While he was preaching on live stream as well.
And did you actually see the video of it?
Yeah, I saw it.
I don't think we want to share that here.
No, we're not going to show the video. You guys can look it up and find it.
But yeah, it was crazy because he's just like walking up, and then while he's talking, and then the guys just start shiving him, like just start stabbing him. It's crazy,
right?
And you see like the audience like react and like a lot of time like they kind of like pause and they're and they start getting up and rushing him.
Yeah, you don't. You just don't expect something like that to happen in the middle of... This isn't like Bishop Lamar Whitehead when he set up his own robbery and getting himself robbed. This is different. This was an actual attack on somebody who...
And multiple people were wounded.
Right. This person was out to kill the bishop, right? This was not just like, oh yeah, give me your money. No, this was... I believe it was a... religiously motivated attack. So
it would appear it could be, yeah.
Yeah, so we don't have all of the details, but I've seen videos from people who were there saying that this was somebody of the Islamic faith who was, you know, doing the typical thing that we hear all the time, Allahu Akbar, and was, you know, came in there to stab him. So Bishop has been he's been vocal about his feelings about Islam and just how a lot of people in the Christian faith are. You know, we're in a competition.
I will also say the Orthodox Church specifically, by what I understand, is very outspoken against Islam. And that's, I think, partially because the Orthodox Church has a history with Islamic societies.
Right. And it's also
over in the East.
Yeah. I was about to say, it's also proximity too. You know,
yeah.
Eastern Orthodox is more in the vicinity of all of that stuff that's going on.
Because I know there's a lot of Orthodox churches in the East, in Asia and stuff, around Muslim countries, near Muslim countries and things like that, Muslim populace. And so they have pretty bad blood with Muslim communities.
Right. So, and then what I thought was beautiful is afterwards, after the guy attacked him and his congregation had him on the floor, and they had the attacker pinned down. The bishop placed his hand on his head, on the attacker's head, and started praying for him. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just, it's the epitome of what a Christian walk is supposed to look like. Like, now, yes, defend yourself in those moments, but when everything is all settled down and whatnot, you are supposed to have love and compassion for those who hate you.
Yeah. It's it's definitely one of those things where protect the innocent and stuff, and then once the threat is gone, then show mercy, and let the government carry out the justice side of it. But what's interesting to me was that the protests that followed from the Orthodox community. I don't know if you saw that, where there were tons of people.
Fill me in on it.
So. I mean, you could look it up too, but there was a bunch of Orthodox community basically came together outside the church. And I think also outside the vehicle that he was being, the culprit was being transported out of, and they were starting to protest. And I think one of the things they were yelling was "bring him out to us" was one of the things they were yelling or something. Like, there was tons of Orthodox Christians gathering and protesting because of the stabbing, because I think this has been, there was another recent, a couple of recent events that happened for this. And now the community's kind of really riled up, in Australia specifically. And so there was giant protests going on, against this behavior and things.
That's tough. It also, you know, you have to be kind of diligent in a way, right? So if you're going to be somebody who is a popular public figure, like Bishop Mari Emmanuel, the bishop, I'm just going to call him the bishop. If you're going to be as outspoken as you are, he was on the Valuetainment podcast speaking about a lot of different things. It's not just, doesn't just speak about Islam. But what's your opinion on this? I think that having church security is important. And I think that if you're in the middle of church and you're the church security and you see somebody quickly walking up the aisle, I think there should have been a security guard to move in on that.
We're living in a time, as long as the country allows for it, I think we're living in a time where church security is important. Even especially if you're like a public figure pastor type person. I'm not saying like you're mega church. I'm just saying like someone like in his case where he's just online and he has a level of following. Like, I feel like security is becoming increasingly more important. That doesn't mean you necessarily have someone who's packing heat, but just someone who's able to react if something seems fishy and to go through some sort of protocol to protect people.
Right. I definitely think so. You know, there was at our church in Puerto Rico, we have a little bit of security, nothing too crazy, but we have protocol for if something happens, especially during youth nights. We have a protocol of how to escape, who stays behind, what door to go to, what locks to do. Like, we have a whole system for safety. Another thing too that I think about is, you know, mega churches be having security, so it's like you're a mega church. You're not even offending anybody, and you got security. But even look at what happened with Joel Osteen's church. There was a shooting.
Yeah.
Inside. Yeah. You know.
And it's one of those things where I wish we didn't have to live in a society like that.
Right.
But it's the reality of the situation. And whether it be a gun, whether it be a knife, whether it be whatever, like, people are using all types of weapons to attack people of faith, and churches and things. So
Yeah.
It's the world we live in right now.
There's a popular YouTuber, I won't say who it is, just because I don't know if he's told this story and I don't want to let it out there. But I know a popular YouTuber who has spoken against Islam. He had to move. Like, he literally had to move his house. Move from his house to a completely different home because of threats from people, from Muslims. And he, you know, just imagine that of, you know, you're just doing apologetics, you know, and you're just arguing for the Christian faith and now you got to move your family.
I do find that. Yeah, it is definitely a frustrating thing. No matter if someone's criticizing your faith or whatever, and whether or not they're, even if they're lying about your faith, like, you know, if they're lying about who you are, never gives you the right to do something like that. And as Christians, it's very easy for us when we see these type of things to want to react with like hate or react with bigotry or react with these type of human reactions. But as you said earlier, we have to show mercy. We have to be different. And when Christ was being beaten, when Christ was being lied about, when Christ was being all these things, we don't see him responding with hate. We see him showing mercy, speaking truth, never stop speaking truth, never compromises the truth. So I'm not saying be like these liberal pastors who try to compromise the truth. Being very bold and outspoken, but still not responding with hate and violence.
Right. And I think that we can learn a lesson from how the bishop reacted to this. And I'm sure he'll probably give a public statement eventually. I've listened to him tell stories about going to the Gaza Strip and, you know, getting out of the bus that he was in to go speak to a little girl. And while he was out there, you know, a whole bunch of people from the community came and he was able to pray for them and gave them some money, collected money from everyone on the bus. And it was like this beautiful experience. And, you know, he was speaking about his compassion for the people who are in Gaza, who they feel forgotten, you know, many of them. And this was before everything that was going on, which is what's going on now. And I guess that kind of brings us to our next and final topic, which we're not going to spend too much time on. But there was, you know, Iran just attacked Israel. Yep. And it's, you know, it's been a tough a little over half a year that this has been going on. There's been a lot of bloodshed, a lot of innocent people on both sides. I mean, unless you're a Calvinist, then nobody's innocent. But, you know, it's just been innocent bloodshed on both sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a government versus another government. And whenever there's a war, there's people caught in the middle.
The most frustrating thing about wars is, I think, as a citizen, you feel so out of, like, you feel like everything's out of your control. Like, you feel so powerless, but you're the one, as a citizen, who suffers. Like, it's your children going to war. It's your money that goes in taxes being spent to blow up other people. And it's people who have more money and power than you do who are making the decisions. And whether or not you like it, they're going to get you into a conflict.
Right.
And so it can get really, really frustrating. It can get really, really frustrating, really scary. And you just start feeling like everything's out of your control and it's hopeless or whatever. So like, I just can only imagine what it's like to live in some of those countries over there where you just feel like all this turmoil. And I'm not even talking to who's right, who's wrong in these situations. Just from a citizen's perspective, it can feel frustrating no matter who you are.
Right. From a citizen's perspective, definitely. And then you have people who, you know, they're ethnically connected to, you know, both parties involved. And this happens all over the place. You know, one of our friends, Arthur, is Armenian. And, you know, there's always conflicts going on over there that don't even get news attention, you know, and that can be really painful. It's a pain that I can't understand. You know?
It's something within the states that I don't think we'll ever, at least, I shouldn't say never, but, you know, at this current moment, we can't comprehend, because for the most part, we don't have, let's just put it this way, most countries are going to try to invade our shores anytime soon.
Right.
So it's just one of those things where we have never really lived in the fear of someone's going to drop a bomb on us or Someone's going to come with a mass raid and we're going to lose. We have never really lived in that fear. And the countries that are surround are the two countries that are beside us, for the most part, we have decent relationships with. I'm not going to say they're great, but they're not bad either. So it's just something we can't fully understand.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the interesting things that I think about the, I'm not trying to make light of this, but Iran attacking Israel is a lot of people believe that, you know, this is now signs, even more signs of the end time. So look, here's how it is. If something's going on in Israel, people are going to think, oh, the end is near. But specifically,
and also the eclipse happened recently, so we all know there's something going on.
We skipped the whole eclipse thing, right? We were all supposed to be raptured during the eclipse. Very upset that I wasn't. But at least now I get to spend more time with my son. So he was actually born the day before the eclipse. So if I would have been raptured, I would have been pretty upset because I would have got less than 24 hours with him. But hopefully he would have came with us. But anyway, so the reason why there's kind of even more talk about this is because Iran, historically, parts of Iran is also Persia. And you have in Ezekiel talks about Persia invading, going to war with Israel. So because of that, people are like, oh man, the end is coming soon. I just want to say this. I think it is interesting to look at how everything that's going on in the world plays out if, you know, depending on which hermeneutic you read the Bible with. But, you know, how you can look in the Bible and see, wow, if this looks like it might be going on. But I just want to warn against hyper-focusing on that type of stuff. You know, let's keep the main thing, which is the gospel. Right. And I got nothing against these prophetic ministries. I do have something against the prophetic ministries where all they do is prophesy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ones who, you know, they look at the Bible and they look at what the prophecies in the Bible, and then they look at what's going on in the world and they're like, I think something might be going on. I'm totally cool with that. If that's your thing, totally cool with it. I learn from people who are into that. I definitely do, because I'm somebody who finds all sides interesting, even if I don't agree with everything. But just let's stay focused on the gospel and focus. If the end is coming soon, then we should be making sure our cameras work. And then we should also just be sharing the gospel with as many people as we can.
It looks like the rapture happened over there.
I just got raptured, so there I go. Now, you know what happens? This camera has like this timer where it's like 30 minutes. It just shuts off, and I don't know how to change it. I think it's trying to tell you something.
It's telling you you're talking too long. You know, you need to...
Yeah, that's probably it. You notice how it never shuts off when you're talking? It only shuts off when I'm talking?
Exactly. It's because no one wants to stop hearing my voice. It's so sweet and, you know, methodic.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to hear the voice of the person who caused the whole entire Mark Driscoll drama?
That's right.
Yep. So with that being said, we have come to the end of our road. It's been a crazy week. Let's hope that next week isn't as crazy. We will be back, same bat time, same bat channel. The Why Jesus podcast. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, definitely send this out, share with people. If you're listening to this online, make sure that you comment, like, share, subscribe. Send this out to...
We need to do one of those things where it's like, smash the subscribe button, you know?
Smash.
If we get this many likes on this video, I'm going to pie John in the face.
Oh man, Jeremy Collins just got here. Now we have to continue...
All right, well, for Jeremy, we're going to recap everything. Let's go for another hour.
All right, so Jeremy, what you missed is, all right, we will see you guys next week. God bless.